ESPN's Teron Davenport, talking Titans now on Robbie and Rex Road on ESPN 102.5 The Game and the Game Nashville app.
Titans taking on the Arizona Cardinals this week in search for win number one on the season. And to help us talk more about that, we head to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And welcome in our friend Teron Davenport, presented by Bart Durham Injury Law and fueled by Parman Energy. TD, Titans ESPN NFL Nation Titans reporter. TD, good morning, man. How we doing?
Hey, good morning. How you guys?
Doing awesome, man. Appreciate you taking time to be with us. So, TD, you put together a piece at ESPN.com talking about the Titans, the 0-4 start, and one of the things that really stood out to me in here was, you know, Kevin Zeitler talking about, you know, how he's been on some rougher teams and the good things happen to those who keep going. So I'm asking you, TD, when you watch this team, and I realize they're coming off a 26-0 loss, how close do you feel like they are to maybe capturing that ever elusive win that they seem to look at the film and say maybe is closer than it would otherwise appear?
Man, they're probably as close as I am to seeing my Mets in the postseason, huh? Rex Rowe, don't you say anything.
I'm not saying anything.
All right. No, all jokes aside, you know, I think this last game, and I said it yesterday on one of my hits for our ESPN vertical, it's really interesting how this team actually is kind of close, and that's the crazy part. Because if you look at the Texans game, that in a microcosm is this Titans season. It's 6-0. There's 4 minutes and 6 seconds left in the third quarter. Jeffrey Simmons had made a play, and then they, you know, you got the two penalties. It's 2nd and 33, deep in Texans territory, and all you need to do is keep everything in front of you. Play your assignment. It didn't happen by two parties in the secondary, and next thing you know, it's a first down. 7 plays later, they score a touchdown. It's 7-0, and you know that's, or excuse me, 13-0, and that was the first of 3 touchdowns in the daggone quarter. And next thing you know, it's 26-0. That game doesn't necessarily, the box score doesn't tell you how close that game was, and that's the thing that's so maddening watching this team. Jeffrey Simmons on Wednesday, he told us something. He said, you know, they had maybe 2 or 3 missed tackles. Now, I believe, I would like to think he was exaggerating, because he said 3 in the first half, but I like to think he was exaggerating about the second half one, where he said they told him they had like 30 missed tackles. That's just the topsy-turvy part of this team, and I think that's where it gets a little maddening as a fan. I think that's where they get so upset, because like their heart is in it, and they're like, hey, we got a chance, and the fourth quarter comes. Outside of the Colts game, the fourth quarter comes, and next thing you know, it's here we go again.
Yeah, and that's the thing. And this may be just me, guys, you know, just being beaten down by, you know, like, and just the expectations of this team to lose. But I still, even when it was 6-0, I didn't think it was going to be a game that came down to the end. Now, again, it's easy to say that now. And like you said, TD, I mean, you're right. They're right there. You get off the field. I never saw much from their offense Sunday that led me to believe they were, you know, they obviously missed those field goals, but like it did look like it was getting worse. And then also in the fourth quarter, like they just, it looked like they, I mean, it was almost a collapse. I mean, that's a crazy number, the missed tackles, but all of a sudden it was just like, okay, like they got nothing left. And I guess my question then is like, how many times of being close, because you're right, 3 of these 4 games, you change a few things and you are right there with a chance to win at the very end. But how many of those failures, along with all the other stuff that's going on around this team with Callahan and now we got Cam or whatever, how much can a team absorb and still keep playing that kind of competitive football?
That's a great point. And you know what it makes me wonder is, okay, that breaking point, that breaking moment that typically happens in the fourth quarter, how much longer or how much more is it going to take for that to happen in the second quarter or the first quarter? You know what I mean? Yeah. And that's where I wonder how quickly this team will break if things go wrong early.
So, TD, you asked Ward earlier this week about the RPO game and just his comfort level, and he gave a pretty good and detailed answer about how long he's been doing that and how comfortable he is with it. When you watch the Titans, how much more room for the RPO game is there? How much more should there be in your mind as they move forward with Ward based on where their offense is right now?
Yeah, I think there is room to do it. I know Brian Callahan as well as Cam Ward, they both discussed how some defenses play different and you can't do it against them. And that's true. But to me, I think it's all about, and especially like that type of play where it's like, okay, you're putting the defense in a damned if you do, damned if you don't type of situation. So to me, it's like, yo, I'm going to dictate what I want to do to you. And that's what I was a bit disappointed with when Brian Callahan got into his reasoning, you know, about opportunities to do it and not doing it as much more. It's what this kid did best. So do it. And then I do like that Callahan had mentioned, you know, the read option portion of it too. And that's something that I would introduce at this point. Like your offense, you scored what, 2 touchdowns in 4 games. Like you got to try everything. And, you know, if you're willing to continue to try these long, slow developing screens, you should be willing to try things that your quarterback was really good at multiple schools in college.
Yeah, well, along those same lines, Didi, we were talking earlier about like last night's game. I think obviously you're a Titans fan. You look around the league, you can find a lot of things around the NFL and say, well, one, it's like, hey, that guy wasn't good here, and look how great he's doing there. Or, gee, a team that scores points.
Game matters.
Yeah, and you're watching the Niners last night. They're down to Kendrick Bourne as wide receiver 1. Mac Jones has been he's scrap heaped twice, and he looks amazing. And so I totally get Titans fans looking at that as an example and saying, you know, why does it look so easy some places? Look at quarterback development some places, scheme and play calling, helping a quarterback be the best version of himself. All of which gets me the question of, you know, based on the information we have now, like how would you assess Callahan and the staff just in terms of getting the best out of a quarterback, developing a quarterback?
Not good enough. Not good enough at all. Did you see the numbers in that story?
Oh, yeah.
We're talking about, like, historical level poor play, you know, from a Titans quarterback. You know, and just to mention one of the numbers, I mean, you look at the 51% completion, right? You know, he's 1 of 4 to have that low, you know what I mean, for the Titans. Vince Young, you know, had the worst. But then you look at the QBR. I mean, DeShone Kizer with the Browns in 2017 is the only quarterback to have a lower QBR through his first 4 starts. You know, so there's a lot to be concerned about there. I refuse to believe that Cam Ward is that quality of a player. I believe wholeheartedly that he has the talent and the wherewithal, the mindset to be a top-level quarterback in this league. So, yeah, there's some disconnect somewhere. Obviously, you know, Rome wasn't built in a year or however the saying goes, but at the same time, you got to see some more flashes, some more spurts. And I think that a part of it is the position that he's in as far as not being, you know, having opportunities as many to do what he could do.
Well, and Didi, to that point, I mean, the numbers you bring up, everything involved with it, I mean, and it's not even factoring in the 10 losses in a row dating back to last year, the overall record, we know how bad it's been. But, like, my focus on the coaching part of this has shifted. Like, you know, I think we all realize that Callahan's probably going to be fired at some point here. But I'm starting to ask the question of, like, I realize NFL teams, for the most part, don't fire people in September and early October. But, like, the numbers that you're throwing out there have to make me wonder, like, is it doing more harm to Cam Ward than good, keeping the status quo in place, when everybody's concern should be about developing him and what's best for him? I'm not seeing much development right now.
No, that's a fact. You aren't seeing much development. You're correct. You know, there's so many factors and things involved in here, because think about it, right? If they were to fire Brian Callahan, right, if they do it early, you know, now that's going to be 4 years in a row, right, that a major – part of the organization has been let go. If you're Mike McCarthy, right, you're looking at that like, you know what I mean? If you're Cliff Kingsbury, it's like the Drake meme where he's got the hand up and he's turning his face away. That's Cliff Kingsbury to this job, right? If you're Matt Nagy, you're like, well, I know Berganzi, but man, I don't know. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. Who's going to want to come here? So I say all that to say, okay, yeah, let's say you do go ahead and you get rid of Callahan now. It shows an extreme knee-jerk type of reaction, right? But let's say you get rid of him at the end of the year. It still shows, okay, like you couldn't take it no more. You made a move, but at least you gave him a couple years to do it. You know what I mean? And it gives a different perspective to whoever would be a coach coming in. So I say that again to say, if you make a move, whoever you bring in, you're looking at a very, very possible short stint for them too, because like, what type of quality coach is going to come here after seeing a GM and head coach fired in back-to-back years? Like, nobody's going to want that.
Well, I mean, that's an interesting point. It's a good point. It does. So your guy, Graziano, who the combo article, Graziano,
Fowler.
Who?
Jeremy Fowler and Dan Graziano.
Yeah, Graziano Fowler. They wrote, you know, interesting piece this week, but one of the points was that, you know, this will be a very attractive job. Cam Ward being mentioned, which I agree, but I think, you know, I'm reading that. I'm like, you guys have got to mention ownership here, right? Because like,
yeah,
I mean, that's gotta be, you know, it's the 32 job thing, right? Like, it's like people are going to, it's in this league, you get a chance to be a head coach, you get a chance to be a GM. But if you're a good candidate, you also aren't just going to have one team after you. So
exactly. So
I think that's a great point. And then you wondered, so if you do get, if it's like, okay, he got his 2 years. Do you think that a McCarthy or whoever, you know, I saw an interesting, you know, Mike Hernan threw out Robert Saleh, head coach, Mike McDaniel, OC. I was like, I don't hate that one. But whoever it may
be. They have ties together in San Francisco.
Sure do.
Yeah. But whoever it is, does that make a difference? Does that change? Does that at least make someone feel, okay, at least they gave the dude the whole second year? Does it help?
I think it would make it a bit lesser of a concern. You know what I mean? But no matter what, any coach coming in here is going to be like, oof, you know what I'm saying? Because yeah. of the way the things have gone over the last 4 years, like this organization is dysfunctional right now. I mean, there's no other way to put it. And then even you look at the Robert Saleh and Mike McDaniel one, that would be cool, but you better hope that Mike McDaniel brings somebody else that is groomed to take his place when he leaves, because you know he's eventually going to leave if the offense. So it's like you'd be a victim of your own success, right? He comes in, Cam Ward.
That sounds okay, though.
It sounds okay, but then it's like, okay, you want 2 years, a good taste in your mouth, and then right back to this mess that you're digesting now? Or do you want, you know, something sustained long term?
Yeah, that's a great point. Well, TD, great conversation as always. For the sake of you, for the sake of me, for the sake of all of us watching, I hope to God it's an entertaining football game this weekend in Arizona. Thanks so much for being with us, and we will talk to you next week, my friend.
Yeah, for sure. I appreciate you, God. I would say go Mets, but...
Hey, oof. Tigers bandwagon's got
yeah,
room, baby.
Join us.
It's not happening. Even though, thank you for Howard Johnson back in the day.
Oh, I loved Hojo. I was very mad we let Hojo go, by the way.
You were mad, I was happy.
That's right. Yes. That's right.
He corked his bat like a champion.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Thank you, TD. Appreciate you, brother.
All right, fellas. Yep.
Yeah, Teron Davenport presented by Bart Durham Injury Law and fueled by Parman Energy. We'll react to what TD had to say coming up next. Take your thoughts at 615-737-1025. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025 The Game. Tomorrow's college football game of the week, Clemson taking on North Carolina at 11 a.m. on Sports Talk 830, presented by Twin Peaks Restaurants and Circa Sportsbook Kentucky. Coverage also available on the Game Nashville app and at thegamenashville.com. We'll have Pigskin Pick'em coming up here in about 10 minutes. Taking your thoughts on the Titans at 615-737-1025. Appreciate TD for being with us in the last segment there. You know, it's almost Groundhog Day talking about the Titans right now, just in terms of, you know, can they find a way to get a win this week? And then they go out there and they just get blown out like they do every week. The point that you bring up and that TD brings up is an interesting one of, like, you know, it's October and we're already talking about how much fight does the team have left? Like, do they just break early? Like, if something goes wrong immediately on the game on Sunday, how long do they have the pushback? Because, Joe, I think at some point with NFL coaches, certainly with college football coaches, you can see this. Like, your team kind of tells you when it's time to go at some point. Like, I realize Notre Dame is a lot better than Arkansas is, but, I mean, you could tell pretty early that Arkansas had no fight, just absolutely no pushback in that game. And when you see it, it's not a surprise that the next day Sam Pittman gets shown the door there in Arkansas. You know, I haven't seen anything quite like that quite yet with the Titans. I think the game Sunday against Houston was probably more of a case. I mean, the time of possession difference, I believe, was 38 to 21. Like, it was 22. It was a big difference in time of possession on Sunday. And I think the Titans defense just got worn down. But I do wonder, like, the deeper this goes and the longer they can't come up with answers, do they just start to break earlier and earlier in games?
Yeah, it's a fair question. And I think that fourth quarter, and I'm not saying this statistically, I haven't compared, but I think that fourth quarter was the low point of the season for them.
I would agree.
Like, you give up, like TD said, Simmons, he's giving them hell, and it's only 6-0, and you've missed two field goals, and it's 2nd and 33, and yeah, L'Jarius Sneed, it's just an absurd mistake.
Ooh.
Not just him. Yeah. And all of a sudden, the fourth quarter, they looked like a dead fish flopping outside of water. And then you wonder, okay, I tell you, we haven't said we asked much today on the show. We have a lot. We don't have much time left to make up our quota here on we ask. But seriously, I do feel like this game could be a little bit of a, and it may not have anything to do with anything. But, like, if they play better, was it a little bit of, hey, maybe the QB lit a fire? And if it's, like, just an absolute blowout, is it like, oh, that didn't help? Maybe that made it worse. I would argue against anybody who thinks it would make it worse. I think it's ridiculous, and I continue to argue with what Charles said yesterday. But I bet you there'll be some conclusions drawn one way or the other.
Probably so. I mean, my general reaction is just in general, they suck. So if they get blown out, it's like, oh, yeah. I mean, that's what they do. Like, I need to go back and double check this because people were talking about this the other day. But I need to go back and see if there's a formula that I could find the actual number from, like, a reputable place. But, you know, Brian Callahan, 3-18 as Titans head coach. I believe he's also 3-18 against the spread. That was the number that was thrown out there last week. Which is, like, just unbelievably
hard.
That's
about right.
Like, it's hard to do.
Last year was historically bad.
Yeah.
And I guess week one, I think they might have covered the 8.5 versus Denver.
Yes.
So I think they only had one or two last year. So it's about right.
Yeah. I mean, that's tough. Tough to do.
Yeah. No, it's atrociously bad. And so, you know, I thought great conversation with TD, and we got some reaction. You know, for example, Kevin on the text line driven by Wilson County Hunter got. WilsonCountyHyundai.com says, fellas, come on. I'm sure there'll be some of that. And he's talking about the coaches, you know, like TD mentioned, you know, being hesitant about ownership. He said, but if you don't think that a good NFL head coach can't see that Brian Callahan is a something clown show, you're crazy. I think that man, you know, a real man not sniffing weasel like BC would look at her keeping on a I can't understand, Kevin. But I hear what your point is. Here's the thing. But again, fine. Yes, they'll get a coach who is somewhat, you know, a good candidate, like everybody does. But if there's three jobs that want a person, they might rank third for that guy because of ownership. And that's where I didn't really like the Graziano piece because, again, it's like you have to mention that factor. You know, so, yeah, like someone says, do you look stupid, though, for keeping Callahan? Yeah, but again – the point is that, like TD said, 4 years in a row of a big change. And if you do it really early, that definitely would feed, like, the conversation about, yes, obviously Callahan, historically bad tenure and all that, but it would. It would go, there'd be more talk about Amy Adams-Strunk and the quick trigger finger in this time of year than there will be in November, December, slash maybe even after the season.
I agree with that. Now, I would also say the ultimate factor in all of that, too, would be like in terms of the attractiveness of the job. Like if Cam Ward just continues to put up bad numbers this year and is as bad as the numbers have suggested that he's been the first 4 weeks, that does way more of a detriment to the attractiveness of the job than anything else, than the ownership, than all those things. So, like, my counter argument would be, like, if you get Callahan out of there and all of a sudden the quarterback play improves, then that probably helps the attractiveness of the job if people think the quarterback actually has a chance to maybe turn into something as time goes on.
Yeah, if it does improve. But
And there's no guarantee that it would, but I'm just saying, like, if – all the numbers suggest that there ain't much quarterback development going on around here with Brian Callahan as head coach.
Yeah. No, that's fair. Texter says Cam was the best QB in a weak QB draft class. Cam is a me first instead of team first guy. I don't think there's any basis to say that last part. I disagree based on what we've seen and heard. Also, Texter says Joe sounds like Porky Pig with all the stuttering.
A bit. We asked, folks. You got a big stuttering problem this morning?
I mean, I certainly have a lot of, that's part of the show. Isn't that part of the charm of the show?
Ian and I were, I think, timing one of your questions to TD at one point. I was like, wow, I think the show's been talking for a minute and a half on this question.
So TD, let me just filibuster for about 5 minutes.
We got Pigskin Pick'em coming up next. Big weekend. Titans football back at it. Vanderbilt, Alabama. We'll get to all that and more. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game.
Now, it's time for Pigskin Pick'em with Robbie and Rex Road on ESPN, 102.5 The Game and the Game Nashville app.
It is time for Pigskin Pick'em here on the program. A standings update in the competition as we head into another week here on the program. Not a very good week for us last week. I was horrific. I went 1-5 without a lock last week, so that was good stuff. Ian Safar, 2-4, no lock. Joe Rexroth, 3-3, did get his lock in the competition, which brings the overall standings. Ian Safar, 18-12, 3-2 on his locks, 21 points. Joe Rexroth, 14-16, 5-0 on his locks.
Let's go.
5-0 on his locks, 19 points. I'm also 14-16, 0-5 on my locks, 14 points. A run of absurdity only the Titans can match. With that in mind, we begin with Vanderbilt and Alabama. Alabama, a 10.5-point favorite in this matchup. Ian Safar, you're in first, so you will go first. Who we have between Vanderbilt and Alabama?
I'm taking Vandy to cover the 10.5. I really want to pick them to win. I hope they play well. I love this Vandy team. You know, Pavia, the whole smack-talking thing's not really up my alley as far as, like, you know, talking trash all the time. But just the way they play and how fun they are on offense, I love that. I'm starting to really – and Clark Lee just seems super classy to me. I'm really becoming a Vanderbilt fan. So give me Vandy, 10.5 to cover.
On Vandy plus the 10.5 on the road at Alabama. Joe Rex Road, Vanderbilt and Alabama tomorrow, 2:30.
Well said, Ian. And yeah, I do wonder, like, how many people who aren't affiliated are becoming Vandy fans for the same reasons. And some people like that trash talk. I agree. It might be a little much at times. Look, I think Bama's going to win this game 34-24. I think Bama's going to win. I think it'll be a good game, but that Bama will kind of get some separation and stay ahead with that offense. But that does also mean that I'm picking Vandy with the 10.5.
I will take Alabama. I think a late touchdown by Alabama extends it to 14, and I think Alabama wins by a couple of scores in a game that will be closer than the final score will appear, but a late touchdown from Alabama sends it to 14, and Alabama covers the 10.5-point spread. We move to the Titans and the Cardinals coming up. Titans on the road. Cardinals an 8.5-point favorite. Joe Rexroad, who we got?
Yeah, the only question here is this my lock or not? Because I want to keep that lock. And I probably should be. I'll hold off on locking, but it's an easy pick. Arizona's going to beat the crap out of the Titans. I'm sorry.
I'm going the Cardinals minus the 8.5 against the Tennessee Titans. I, too, will take the Cardinals minus the 8.5 against the Tennessee Titans. Ian Safar, who do you have?
I am also going to take the Cardinals. I don't know. I mean, this is good as any. So just as good a chance as anybody to cover. So I'm going to actually lock the Cardinals 8.5. I don't feel great about it for some reason, because I don't think Arizona's super great, but neither was Houston. So
that's true.
I will take the Cardinals 8.5, and I'll make that my lock.
I am confident, though, the Titans will score more than they scored last week in this game. I'm pretty certain about that. Not totally certain, but pretty certain about that. We move to the individual portion of the program. Four individual selections this week. I will begin. Give me Texas -4.5 against Florida and make it my lock. I'm locking down on the Longhorns. Florida's beaten down. They're defeated. Arch Manning, I think, will look like he knows how to throw a forward pass this week. And Texas will go on the road and cover the 4.5-point spread against Florida. Locking down on the Longhorns. Ian Safar, your first individual selection.
Okay, I will stick with college. Give me Maryland +6.5 hosting Washington. Far trip for Washington coming off the game versus Ohio State. Home dog, 6.5 points. I'll take Maryland.
Maryland +6.5, the cross-country trip for Washington in the Big Ten Conference, which is a very historical matchup. Maryland and Washington. Joe Rexroad, your first individual selection.
Yes. Yeah, just having meet in Kansas, you know. Yeah, you know what? That was a very close. I almost picked that one, too, and I would have made the same pick. Malik Washington from Maryland. If people haven't seen him, he's fun. Now, Damon Williams from Washington, also a very fun player. But I like that pick. I'm going Air Force at Navy, -12.5. You know, listen, I grew up, speaking of rivalries and fandom, I grew up rooting against Navy with an Army dad. But Navy is badass. Blake Horvath and the boy, I think they're getting a little bit disrespected here with this line. They're going to put a number on Air Force. Give me Navy. Make it my lock.
Locking down on Navy.
Guarantee.
-12.5 against Air Force. Ian Safar, your second individual selection.
Sticking with college for my second one as well. Give me Notre Dame -20.5 versus Boise State. Notre Dame, you know, the Arkansas game might be a little bit of a fluke. Talked about it. I can't remember. You mentioned it earlier how Arkansas kind of looked checked out. They fired the coach. So this might be a little tricky, but give me Notre Dame -20.5 versus Boise State.
Notre Dame really has no choice but to be overly impressive the rest of the way if they want to make the college football playoffs. So Notre Dame -20.5 against Boise State. Joe Rexroad, your second individual selection.
All right, taking it to the Big Ten. Illinois at Purdue. Purdue getting 9.5 at home. I just got to think Illinois. I'm a little shaky on Illinois. Huge win over USC. Could have gone either way, but I think they're going to beat down the Boilers a little bit with that run game. Give me Illinois giving the 9.5 on the road.
So Illinois -9.5 on the road against Purdue. Give me App State -1.5 against Oregon State. Oregon State, cheeks. Give me App State -1.5. You know, Joey Aguilar's aura still living on at App State. -1.5 against Oregon State. Joe Rexroad, your third individual selection.
I looked at that one, too. I like it. I like it. Okay, Clemson at North Carolina. North Carolina at home. Oh, Bill Belichick. Remember, this was going to be some huge game this year. Oh, Dabo and Belichick. Oh, my. Well, UNC's getting 14.5 at home. You know, some people would be afraid of that half. I'm not at all. Dabo, as bad as it's been, they're going to go in there and put a freaking beating on Belichick's awful football team. Give me Clemson -14.5 on the road.
Clemson -14.5 on the road against the Tar Heels of North Carolina. Give me the Indianapolis Colts -6.5 against the Raiders. Colts looking good. I actually was probably more encouraged by the Colts in their loss to the Rams than I was by any win that they've had this year. Because I think the Rams are pretty good and the Colts totally screwed it up. So give me the Colts -6.5 against the Raiders. Ian Safar, your third individual selection.
Okay, moving to the NFL for my next two. I'm going back to the well on the Dublin game, or I guess it's the England game, the over there.
Yep.
Browns +3.5. Dylan Gabriel getting the start. Carson Wentz also getting the start for Minnesota. Dealing with some injuries. I don't know. Browns plus 3.5. I'm taking it.
I like it. Browns plus the 3.5 overseas against the Minnesota Vikings. Joe, round us out with your final individual selection.
Well, I'd like to go right against that. Thank you very much. I am taking the Vikings minus the 3.5. The Vikings have been living over there in Europe.
It's true.
Cleveland's going over there. I don't think Dylan Gabriel's very good. Their other quarterback is wants to be Charlie Chaplin. I think I'm going with that team that's been over there. I'm going to grab the Wentz wagon, baby.
Going with Minnesota minus 3.5. Ian Safar, your final individual selection.
Okay, I'm going to go for a Chargers bounce back. Disappointing game versus the Giants on the East Coast. Now they're going back home to host Washington. Jane Daniels is supposed to return and play, but Chargers only 2.5, so I get the field goal. Give me Chargers minus 2.5 versus Washington Commanders.
Going Chargers minus 2.5, and now down both tackles against the Washington Commanders, but Herbert has been, for the most part, pretty strong so far this year. Give me Michigan minus 16.5 against Wisconsin. Wisconsin is horrible, and Wisconsin is in for some long conversations on the Luke Fickell front, who has a significant buyout. But my goodness, it's not going well for the Badgers. Give me the Wolverines minus 16.5 against Wisconsin. Not very good, those Wisconsin Badgers, Joe Rexroth.
No, I like that pick. I do. I think, yeah, and you're right. It has been way worse than I ever would have guessed when they got Luke Fickell in there, but it just isn't a fit.
It's Vrabel's boy.
Yeah, I know. I mean, he did really good things at Cincinnati, but it just goes to show you, I mean, sometimes a coach and a place don't fit, and I just think going in there and say, you know what, we're going to run a version of the air raid here at Wisconsin. There is something to, it's just like when you go to Iowa, whoever replaces Ferentz, you know what, play D and run the ball. I know it's boring, but man, it can work, and it worked for a long time for the Badgers.
615-737-1025, our phone number. We'll take your thoughts, your picks for this weekend. Our final thoughts on Vanderbilt and Alabama and the Titans and the Cardinals coming up next. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 1025 The Game. Vanderbilt taking on Alabama tomorrow, pregame at 1 o'clock on 94.9 The Fan, kickoff at 2:30. Vanderbilt football brought to you by Gary Force Acura, Jimmy Kelly's Steakhouse, and Smoky Mountain Tops. So, Joe, speaking of that game, if Vanderbilt's going to hang in there and if Vanderbilt's going to win, what do they have to do against Alabama tomorrow besides score more points than the other team?
Well, that's step one. Daniel, that is an important part of it. Yeah, I think you got to, and I don't want to like disrespect Vanderbilt's defense. I think it's more watching Alabama's offense come together. And they left some stuff on the field against Georgia, but I think Ty Simpson is really a good quarterback. Ryan Williams hasn't played his best. It's been a little bit disappointing. At some point, he's going to have a breakout game. I said that earlier this week. Like, man, you could see it, you know, this week maybe. But I think Vanderbilt has to win the turnover battle. I know these are some of these, like, cliche football things. But, like, the turnover battle, the special teams, I think in a game like this, they are at a disadvantage. Alabama has more talent across the board. Alabama wants revenge for last year. Alabama has confidence now and has kind of put the whole Kalen DeBoer screaming in the rear view. I think those are a lot of intangible things that are against Vanderbilt. You know, last week they had the punt block, ridiculous call that took that off the board. They need something like that. You know, they need a big return. They need to be plus overall when you compare the kicking games. And I think they need to be plus on the turnover side. Even if it's just like you don't turn it over at all and you get one from them, can you get them to punt a few times? I mean, I just think it's going to be tough sledding for Vanderbilt's defense. But also, Vanderbilt's offense has to know that it has to have its very best day. And I think Vanderbilt's offense, I'll take them right now in any game. You put Vanderbilt's offense against the way Ohio State is playing defense, I still think Vanderbilt's offense would score some points against Ohio State's defense, which looks like possibly the best in the country right now. But they have to be, you know, it's got to be Pavia's got to have a Heisman-like performance. If they win, he's automatically going to be he's going to be in those discussions heavily. But he's got to have a performance that is Heisman-like, I think, for them to have a chance to win.
Well, I think specifically they're going to have to hit a couple shots down the field. And they've done that to this point in the season, but the competition's about to go up. Now, we saw Florida State connect on a couple shots down the field. Week one is, you know, is the Alabama defense the same defense today as they were in that game? Probably not. But I think we saw it last year, right? Like, there are a lot of really important plays in the game for Vanderbilt, whether it's the interception. You know, you can point to a lot of different things. But, I mean, the shot they hit on fourth down, probably the biggest play of the game last year. So, with that in mind, like, you're going to have to – I'm with you. Like, I've got confidence that Vanderbilt's offense can move the ball. I've got confidence that they can score points. But I do think in this game, you're going to have to hit probably two or three shots down the field, either to score quickly or to give yourself or to move the ball, change field position really quickly. I think that's going to be really important. And we've talked about this with Pavia specifically. Like, it does feel like he has gotten a lot better at throwing the deep ball from last year to this year. And I think we're going to find out how much better in this game, because I think they're going to, you know, if you're Alabama, you're looking at it, you just got gashed on the ground by Georgia. You know that Vanderbilt, while they've got a different rushing attack, can hurt you on the ground. I do think there's going to be a lot of attention from Alabama on trying to slow down Vanderbilt running the football, and I think that's going to leave them susceptible at times to one-on-one matchups on the outside. And you have to take advantage of that if you're Vanderbilt in this game. You just have to. You can't win if you
right.
don't.
Right. No doubt. And look, if you're Alabama, that's the strategy that makes sense, because you got the Jimmys and Joes. They're the most talented team, Ohio State and Alabama, by the numbers, by the recruiting profiles, are the two most talented teams in college football. And you've got the guys. You should have the guys to be able to do that and play man and hold up. And I'm with you. Vanderbilt needs to make those shots hit. I agree. Like, last year, that play, that fourth down with the touchdown, which is, I mean, Pavia's like, he's actually running forward and launches it. And then the tip pick. I mean, those are the two biggest plays of the game to me that, and it's like plays like that, I think, are going to be needed. I got a Vandy fan says, goodness gracious, you sound like you're answering the keys to a Titans victory. Basically, everything has to be perfect. Give me my Vandy boys, 35-31. I mean, I don't think we're disrespecting Vanderbilt. Like, you got to look at Alabama, terrible game against Florida State aside, and all the circumstances. There is zero surprise ambush in this one. It's the opposite of that, right? I mean, you have to take that into account.
Speaking of the Titans, how many points are the Titans scoring on Sunday? Ian?
Will they make 20? Will they make it to 20?
That
asking too much.
I think it might be. I'm going 16.
No Ridley.
16 is my answer, and I'm stretching to get to 16.
Give me 11, just as some weird number. The Titans go to 11 this week.
All right. They'll get at least
go for two and a field goal.
One touchdown, couple of field goals, 13.
13. So 11, 13. I'm the most optimistic and say 16. Boy, if that doesn't sum up where things are with this football team right now.
24-13 sounds about right.
Yeah, I could see that. God bless
us. So anyway, back.
We're going to be watching that game on Sunday? Do we have to?
It's an afternoon game. Those 3 o'clock games
nap time.
Those make me even less likely to watch, because I am just fantasy footballed early slate wiped out by 3. And I need, like, a break. I'll go walk outside and touch grass.
I mean, we kind of have to, though, right?
Yeah, unfortunately.
So, maybe we should like, do an experiment one week and not watch 1 second of the game and see if it
I mean, makes to be any honest difference with you, at all. We could not watch 1 second of pretty much every game they played the last 2 years and probably have
a
pretty good idea of what happened.
How much better would our collective mental health be if we had not watched any Titans football in the last 3 years?
Probably significantly.
We'd be like the happiest. We'd be zippity doo-dah.
You wouldn't have been so down in the dumps about the Tigers. You'd have had faith the whole time.
I would have believed. Yeah. Would have been nicer to my neighbors, be in better shape, eat healthier foods.
Top tier on the YouTube
Watch
chat.
Watch my car more often.
Says the Titans are a lock at +8.5, as long as Snead doesn't give up a 37-yard disaster play again. A lock at +8.5 from top tier on the YouTube chat. I like it. I respect the faith.
Yeah, I mean, I do too. It's nice to have alternative views, but boy, that's a bad take. I'm sorry. Yeah, first of all, as long as Snead doesn't screw something up big, okay, well, there's a good luck counting
big if.
On that.
Yeah.
And like Ian just said, I mean, so you take as bad as it's been with Ridley, out there, you take him away. Ugh. My goodness. I mean, I Io Manor has been a nice story early in the season. He's not a wide receiver one. He never will be. And so then you get into, boy, how stodgy could this be without even that threat of Ridley?
Enjoy it this weekend. We will be back Monday morning at 6 o'clock. Next Man Up with Jake Lyman coming up next. You're listening to 102.5 The Game.